Hello and welcome back to Techonomics. I'm your host, Jason Middleton. We talked about Brexit. There's a fear of a Frexit with France, and we almost had a Grexit last year. So let's look at the United States. Since the Great Recession rolled through the world's economies, the recovery has been iffy at best. Of all the major economies on the planet, the United States is the best place to keep investing, but just barely. One reason is the Federal Reserve stepped in and started a stimulus package of buying treasuries like it was a job. Billions spent every month just to keep the economy chugging along. Europe did not. And the pace of recovery is modest, again, at best. Many experts think that growth around 2% is the new normal. And we're pretty sure wage growth is on a milk carton somewhere because it hasn't been seen for a while. All that said, investors are looking down the barrel of the third economic quarter of this year, which got underway on July 1st. Wall Street is still in bull market territory, but you'll hear me say this a ton on this show. The markets are not the economy. We grabbed an economist and market analyst at Wells Capital Management to help us make sense of what to expect in the coming 3 months. I spoke with Gary Schlossberg earlier this week.
Gary Schlossberg, senior economist, Wells Capital Management.
Okay, we're starting our third quarter. First quarter, sluggish. Second quarter, a little bit of improvement. Just in a macro way before we get really into the weeds, how are we teed up for the third quarter?
Third quarter, I think we're looking at moderate economic growth. It's still unbalanced. We're still seeing strength in housing and consumer spending. Consumers getting an added lift, not only from lower fuel costs, gasoline prices down over the past couple of weeks, but also from refi activity. That refi volume is up. That means there will be savings from reduced mortgage payments. At the other end of the spectrum, trade-sensitive activity still feeling the effects of weakness overseas, uncertainty associated with the Brexit vote, and the strength in the dollar's exchange rate.
Also, there seems to be a continuing thread with this interest rate cycle. So let's look at that again, because we kind of have to, don't we?
Well, that seems to be dominating the financial markets and certainly having a bearing on the investment environment. Could spill over to the economy as well down the road. To some extent, Brexit has actually accentuated that split in the economy. It's helped drive the dollar up, and that's weighing on our competitive position. At the same time, all that money moving into U.S. Treasury securities, both yield-driven and flight-driven concerns about the outlook, driving those yields lower. And, of course, mortgage rates are down. They're down to about a three-year low now, and that's simply underpinning housing further. The problem is, though, that there are distortions being created in the financial markets. All that central bank buying of securities, driving yields down overseas, making them negative, encouraging money to move into even low-yielding U.S. securities, at least there is some yield, creating some inflation in asset values, some leveraging going on, distortions in investments. And that could be a problem for not only the U.S. economy, but the global economy, even if interest rates begin to turn and move very gradually higher.
So in a macro kind of 30,000 foot way, are we seeing people moving towards a riskier position, or are you seeing people moving? I think you just mentioned Treasuries getting a lot of cash influx right now, too. What's that trend?
Well, everything's relative. Foreigners seeing negative yields in Europe and Japan, and further declines in interest rates already near zero in the UK, find our securities attractive, and of course, they're still considered to be risk-free. Investors here, however, continue to search for yield. By their standards, the yield on government securities is quite low, so they're beginning to extend out, not only reaching for longer-dated investments where the yield's a little bit higher, but into riskier investments as well. And riskier covers the whole gamut. It also includes stocks. We're seeing the yield-oriented sectors of the market, notably utilities and telecom communications, services, I should say, doing well in the market. But more attention to the high yield or non-investment grade sector of the market as well in that search for some sort of yield income, interest income.
I look at my 401ks and I look at my other retirement accounts, and they look pretty good right now. Am I whistling past the graveyard with this, or should I be concerned?
Well, we may be paying the piper down the road. At the moment, even bonds, even negative yielding bonds overseas, are doing well as investors are forced to pile in further out along the maturity spectrum, but certainly here as well. Bonds have become more like stocks. Most of the return you're seeing is driven by price increases. There's very little yield. Historically, more of the return has come from yield, less from price changes. Conversely, people are looking at those yield-oriented stocks. They're doing well, too. They're getting a lot of price return. But the problem is that when interest rates begin to stabilize, if and when they ever do begin to stabilize, and if they ever turn the corner, we could see the reverse of what we're seeing with prices. Those prices could be moving down, and both for bonds and stocks, and those attractive returns you may be seeing at the moment could look a whole lot less attractive. A lot depends on the outlook for interest rates, but at the moment at least, what you're seeing is a byproduct of these extraordinarily low interest rates, a movement by investors into certain types of stocks and other riskier assets, and in some cases, inflated values.
You know, I was reading through your commentary, and you mentioned small caps, and I was wondering if you could help me with a teachable moment. And let's talk about small caps, and then let's talk about the Russell. What? How do you define a small cap?
I don't know, a teachable moment.
It could be a teachable moment for them.
This ends up being what's called a teachable moment.
Small caps tend to have a market cap of less than $5 billion. All the way down to the microcap limit, which varies depending on the index. But these could be very large, well-known companies that are something like fallen angels. They've seen big declines in their stock price, and market caps could push them into the small cap area. But generally, they're smaller companies. They're just getting started on the way up, or they're getting pressured on the way down. They tend to be more U.S. sensitive, focused more on the U.S. market rather than overseas, and that's an advantage for small caps at the moment. They also have, generally, the smaller companies have less in the way of financial resources, so they are more interest sensitive, more dependent on bank borrowing, perhaps financing in the bond market. And with rates down, that's another benefit for this segment of the market. And then the third advantage, of course, is that they are viewed as riskier, but that means more highly charged, more upside potential, and they should benefit in this kind of environment where investors increasingly, with the support of central banks lowering interest rates further and the Fed staying on the sidelines before it moves its rates up, we're seeing a general rotation into riskier assets, and that's benefiting the segment as well. Small caps, the Russell 2000 index, been up for six straight days now, right through this morning.
Small and mid caps are listed on the Russell. And is that something that is on your dashboard every morning?
Sure is. We always comment on small caps, how they're doing relative to the S&P 500, especially in this environment where, because of the uncertainties in the global economy and in the wake of Brexit, there does seem to be more of a risk-on, risk-off trading activity, and they are considered certainly part of that riskier asset segment.
A bit of a bull rally last week, and we saw a bit of a profit take in the midweek. Gary, I've got a couple more minutes. What did you want to cover that I didn't ask you about?
Well, you know, certainly the dollar is playing a role in asset returns going overseas, the stronger dollar undercutting overall returns in the market, and in some cases influencing even the domestic returns that we're seeing. For example, in the UK, the FTSE 100, that's the 100 large cap companies, most of those are very much exposed to exports. With the pound dropping, that's provided a lift to that index throughout this post-Brexit period of turbulence. At the other extreme, the yen moving up means that the Nikkei, which is also export-oriented because Japan's losing export competitiveness, has suffered. I think the other element out there is, to some analysts, a confusing rise in the bond market and the stock market at times. I think this simply reflects the growing importance of foreign investment in the U.S. Historically, when interest rates rise, driven by domestic considerations, that tends to lift the dollar but weigh on the stock market. In this environment, interest rates very often over the past several months have been driven by foreign investment. So very often you'll see foreign investment coming into the U.S., driving interest rates down, but they have to buy dollars to make those investments, and it drives the dollar up in the market. And, of course, it benefits the stock market in the process.
And we're also in corporate earnings season. Corporations are showing their bottom lines and their top lines. How did the second quarter earnings look, and what are your expectations for third?
Well, I think the real issue in the market is less how corporate earnings perform in the second quarter. The expectation, I think, is somewhere between just under 5% down and 5.5% as a decline. A lot of that continues to be centered on energy because of the tough year earlier comparisons, despite the improvement quarter to quarter. I think a lot of the attention will be on commentary about the outlook for the second half of the year. There is the expectation that we will be getting an earnings recovery. Question now is how strong. Some of that recovery will be somewhat statistical, better year-earlier comparisons for the energy sector. We had been hoping that multinationals would benefit from a weaker dollar. That boosts the dollar equivalent earnings of foreign income, but now the dollar is holding its own, moving up more often than not, so we may not get that kind of lift. I think the biggest issue, though, is in that core component. Unit sales, pricing power, the rise in costs. Margins have been under pressure for the last several quarters. They had been a main engine of earnings growth earlier in the recovery. So the focus is on the economy and what effect it's going to have on unit sales growth. And the hope is that will be a pleasant surprise. But at the moment, we're looking at fairly moderate growth. So you put all the pieces together, I think the earnings recovery that we're looking at in the second half of the year could be a bit more moderate than expected. And how that affects the market, we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, Gary, there are a lot of moving parts there, but that's why you make the big bucks.
Thanks, Jason.
Gary Schlossberg, he is a senior economist at Wells Capital Management. Thanks a lot, Gary.
Bye-bye.
This uneven recovery and the mixed data points makes me think back to Fed Chair Alan Greenspan mentioning, quote, irrational exuberance. And I think Silicon Valley surely remembers what happened next. Coming up after the break, Pokemon Go. We'll look at how, in a short time, Pokemon Go's mobile app is fascinating almost everyone who has a smartphone.
And so I walk up my path to my door, and I get into the door frame, and she comes running up, and she's like, wait, there's a Pokemon inside your house. Can I come in and get it?
Can the fad last? Is it a toe in the water for augmented reality for more consumers than ever? And is it time-sucking workplace productivity? Yes, the business of Pokemon Go coming up next. Please stick around.